So you see symbolically, you're seeing the man who's trying to turn to Christ. The mind wants to turn, but it's reluctant. It wants the thing to happen within its own preconceived pattern of thought. It can't just say, I surrender, you tell me. But when he does surrender and bathes in the Jordan 7 times, that's the surrender to Christ. Out of the human sense of mind, and of course, that's the end of his leprosy. Now, that bathing in the Jordan 7 times is a symbol which is later used by Jesus when he says to the blind man here, now that I've joined spittle with clay and rubbed it, anointed on your eyes, wash it off in the pool of Siloam. Same as saying, bathe 7 times in the Jordan. The pool of Siloam, then, is where you and I are learning to bathe. 7 times. Until we are totally free of the sense of mortality. Until the body of clay becomes another body. Not the old body of clay, of mortal clay, but the new spiritual body is formed as you bathe in the pool of Siloam. The pool of Siloam is the Word of God expressing in you. I think in Nehemiah, the prophet, it's mentioned. Only it's spelt with an H at the end instead of an M. It's called the Pool of Siloam. And this is after Jerusalem has been sacked. This is in the rebuilding of Jerusalem. And that pool is in the king's court that descends from the steps that come down from the city of David. All of the symbolism to tell you that the seventh heaven and the pool of Siloam are one and the same. The highest consciousness. When you're one with the infinite, you're in the pool of Siloam. And the pool of Siloam has become the title of the book, Realization of Oneness. The pool of Siloam is that which is sent from the one infinite mind. When you bathe in the pool of Siloam, you're not in human thought, you're in the thought of the one infinite mind. And that objectifies as your healing, or the harmony of your experience. The Pool of Siloam is divine thought, which now becomes visible as divine action where you stand. It is sent from the Father. When you come out of human thought, you're in the Pool of Siloam. You're in that which is sent from the Father, divine thought. And when you're in divine thought, you are one with the infinite mind. In that oneness, the one power of the infinite functions as your being. Bathe in the pool of Siloam. Rest in the knowledge that the perfect divine mind here is thinking the perfect divine thought here now. Be still and let it be your thought without taking thought. And it will wash away from your eye the false sense of blindness to the truth that the kingdom of God is here in all its perfection right this moment. We're coming into the clear crystal water of one mind. And that will bring us into the realization of oneself. Jesus always said, the Father sent me. That which is sent of the Father is divine thought expressing as. Divine thought was expressing as Christ Jesus. He was sent. He was divine thought appearing. He was the perfect divine image. Sent. He was one with the infinite. Now these four different blind healings then are not about blind people, although they're the instrument for the secret teaching. They're about the blindness of the human mind, which must be released in order for the light of the infinite mind to function you as the child of God, the offspring of the divine light. Every little tremor of fear and doubt and worry, false belief, is a second mind. A mind that can only behold the divine light through a glass darkly. And that's why we are not resisting anymore these illusions of evil, not reacting. One perfect mind. Hear now, accept it, be still. I'm bathing in the pool of Siloam. Actually following the instructions of the Master. Bathe in the pool of Siloam. Divine thought where you are. And it descends like a staircase from the city of David, which is Christ consciousness. The city of David, the seventh heaven, the staircase. Each day and each night coming down, down, down to this level of human selfhood. One flow of spiritual truth. Now while it is day, the period between birth and death is the preparation for the soul universe. That is the moment of purification. And then there will be no night. There will be no period between death and birth, preparing for re-entry to a mind universe, because it will not be necessary. The light of the world coming through the divine mind expressing as you releases you from the need to enter night as a second preparation for a return to this world. The preparations by day are in the corporeal body. The preparations by night are without a corporeal body. Those are the cycles. In the pool of Siloam, we're preparing by day. And when you are released from mortal mind, there will be no night. I think we'll take a short intermission now. The one thing the human mind is not prepared for is life without end. It's just something it can't contemplate. And so it continues to act in the belief that that which is life with an ending can be life. The human mind thinks that the life span is life, and it lives within that sphere, trying to make a better lifespan. But the lifespan isn't life. The blindness revealed here is the nature of mortality, that mortality itself is a state of blindness, in which we picture second selves made of flesh. Where only the self of spirit is. And this is to alert us to the separation of that mind from reality, so that the good minds and the bad minds, the brilliant ones and the stupid ones, are all recognized as separated from reality, no matter what picture they show forth. They are going to see second selves of flesh, and spirit can never create flesh. That mind is going to see conditions that have no existence, conditions of matter, and spirit can never create matter. And so the mind has got to reject that which says to the mind, everything you have ever believed is a lie. And the mind that rejects the truth continues to imprison man in a body of flesh. Because it will not accept that life eternal is the only life, and it is not lived in a body of flesh. The blindness that is called mortality ended for Paul at one day. He was in a state of blindness with eyes that could see. Eyes that could see bodies of flesh. He was blind, but he didn't know it. Well, there they are. And those very people that he was attacking were breaking the law as he saw it of his God. But he was blind. They weren't there. And then in a moment he became physically blind. But that physical blindness was the awakening. It was becoming blind to the real blindness of mortality. And when the blindness was over and the light came through, he no longer saw bodies of flesh. He was no longer blind. The mortal blindness was removed. And the Christ reality was accepted. In other words, the light of Christ had broken the world mind which functioned as Saul. Just as the light of Christ had broken the world mind which functioned as the blind people in these healings. And removes the blindness of mortality, with all the conditions of mortality included in that blindness. And restores us to the eyes, the ears, sense of touch, smell and taste, the senses of the soul. Now look at this statement by Joel, and you see how far we're coming now, because Joel tells us here in no end that dehypnotism is a state of consciousness that sees that which actually is. It's the ability to see, to taste, to touch, to hear, and to smell reality. The ability to see sin not as sin, disease not as disease, but rather to be able to separate these from the person. Realize we're dealing with a false appearance produced by the belief of a selfhood apart from God. And the seat of that false appearance is the mind that perceives it. Now, once the blindness is removed, even if it has to make us physically blind to remove it, it's still good. It is awakening us from the false ego and bringing us an inner light which will reveal the non-mortal reality and eyes that will see not what the world sees, but through what the world sees. Now you can see Christ seeing through what the world sees. You can hear Joel speaking of seeing through what the world sees. And therefore, we will see through what the world sees. But first, we have to bypass this mind. This mind takes the Pharisees is the human mind, and it takes the blind man now who was healed. And even though you have had healings, that's the point of this, even though you have seen healings, there still come times when you're faced with a new condition. And everything you've learned about all of the old conditions that disappeared in the face of the inner Christ of you is forgotten. You panic all over again. Why? Because even though the blind man was healed, the mind says, what about everything I know? What about my total experience up to now? I've had a few isolated healings. So what? I've also lived these many years, and I've seen a lot of other things that weren't healed. And frankly, I never saw a blind man healed like that. So the mind says, impossible. The mind says, I never saw bread falling out of the sky. Impossible. And I've read a lot about healings, and I've seen some, but they're not the general rule. They're the exceptions. I can't live with those exceptions. And so the mind in you turns from Christ, and it even accuses the one who is blind of doing something to falsify this evidence. In other words, the mind in you is still Thomas. Even though it is seen, it is still bewildered. And here's a funny twist. It has believed the man was blind up to the point that he was healed. But when he's healed, it doesn't believe he was blind. The man is blind because my eyes see he's blind. But now that he's healed and my eyes see he can see, I can't believe my eyes. Something is wrong. The senses will always pervert and distort the evidence. Now, you're told to do what this blind man did in a certain way. They brought to the Pharisees him that aforetime was blind. It was a Sabbath day when Jesus had made the clay and opened this man's eyes. Now the Pharisees asked him how he had received his sight. Their motive wasn't so that they could go out and do the same, but to prove that something had been faked. The mind cannot accept the divine activity outside of its own limited mental scope. Well, he said he put clay on my eyes and they're washed and I saw. Some of the Pharisees said, now, this man is not of God because he keepeth not the Sabbath. The healing did not indicate he was of God, because a man of God certainly wouldn't break the law of the Sabbath. And so Jesus was not of God. This is the Christ of God, which the mind says is not of God. And so the mind refuses to accept the Christ because it had found some little flaw in the work which did not obey man-made laws or concepts. He's alerting us to the tricks of our mind for getting out of the responsibility of accepting our own spiritual self. And others said, now how can a man that is a sinner do such miracles? In other words, he's a sinner because he healed on the Sabbath. And this may sound silly to us now, but when you sit down with your own mind, you'll find that it behaves in just that fashion. It's all deep within us that we find all of the reasons and excuses for not accepting our spiritual self. And that's what this is all about. You cannot accept the perfection of yourself as a spiritual being. Your mind says it's impossible. Or even if it's possible, maybe not in this incarnation. But here's a blind man from birth healed in one incarnation. In the same incarnation that he's born blind, he's healed. In one incarnation. There's a point there. We don't have to do it the third time around from now, or the fourth or fifth, but in one incarnation. Once we're not a divided consciousness with a mind that says, well, you know, I really am not very far advanced in this. Or I don't expect to have the Christ consciousness within the next 10 years. I couldn't do it that quickly. You see, it's present now. The mind of God is present right this instant. It's not a matter of 10 years from now. It's right now. And the mind says, no, I just couldn't possibly begin to do that within 10 years, and yet here it is now. The mind is turning away from the now Christ. That's the point of this. And even as we talk about it, you find your mind is turning away from the now Christ in some subtle fashion that you don't seem to be able to control. And this is explaining the automatic method whereby mind turns away from Christ even while you think you're trying to find Christ. Some people love the pursuit. They're afraid of getting there, because getting there is a new responsibility. But you must accept the nowness of Christ, not the tomorrowness. And that means the nowness of the perfection of Christ. And therefore the imperfection is the way you reject the nowness of the perfection of Christ. Now, while that person is falling off of the hill, now is Christ perfect and present there. The capacity to accept the nowness of the perfection of Christ in spite of whatever might appear, and to be living in that consciousness, in the nowness of the perfection of Christ. And then that mind can squirm and wriggle and find excuses and take the blind man and treat him as a criminal. Cross-examine him and put him through the third degree to confirm and verify that which is obvious the man can see and he couldn't before. Why not just accept Christ is present? Something has done this great healing work. Something that did it then is present to do it now. But they debate, because the mind is divided. If it accepts this miracle, it has to admit whatever it knew is false. It's protecting its own limitations. It cannot go beyond the boundaries which it has already accepted. So it lives in its own prison of past experience. So now they come again to the blind man. They're determined to break down his story. The mind wants to live in its own comfortable niche without straining into another level. What sayest thou of him that opened thine eyes? Poor blind man won't cooperate. He just says he's a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him that had received his sight. And then they said to the parents, is this your son whom you say was blind? And then how does he see now? And the parents, of course, are kind of fearful. Public opinion has let it be known that if anyone declares himself to be the Christ, he'll be stoned to death. They're not about to say this man must be the Christ of God for having done this. And so it is shown that within you, still clinging to the past, to your bondage to heredity, the mind of you still lingers with the thought, why, it really couldn't have happened, I guess. I see it happen, but it's hard to believe it. The mind still vacillates. You've still got the false sense of heredity lingering in that mind which has not broken away from human birth and accepted spirit, which can never be born into humanhood. All these little facets of the mind are reminding us of the limitations that we have fallen into and which we do not have the energy or conviction or integrity to break out of, while they happen around us automatically, even unknown to our conscious mind, that we're held into these things. So he's awakening all of the levels of the conscious and unconscious mind to the tricks of the mind that hold it in bondage. And parents answer, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. We know not why, what means he now seeth, or who has opened his eyes. But he is of age. Why don't you ask him? He'll speak for himself. And so the parents cannot testify. Your heredity cannot testify the truth of you. Your heredity, humanly, is not the truth of you, and it cannot testify completely in the truth of you. That's another way the Bible is saying here, we're not born of woman, and if we are, we're not the son of God. The Son of God is not the son of woman. The son of human parents is not the son of God. You cannot be both. Even the parents cannot testify truly about the Son. Only the Christ in you can testify truly about you. So, these words spake his parents because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if any man did confess he was Christ, he should be put out of the synagogue. Therefore said his parents, he is of age, ask him. Again, they call the man that was blind. Now this is a vendetta, you can see by now, by the mind. It's determined to prove that whatever was done outside that human mind couldn't be true. Whatever was done outside the church couldn't be true. The human mind says, I am the authority here, and there is no other. I will not accept an authority outside of my human mind. That's the nature of the mind that is blind. Now they ask him to praise God. Give God the praise. We know this man is a sinner. And the blind man says, well, whether he be a sinner or no, I know not. But I do know one thing. Whereas I was blind, now I see. Now they are blinded by unbelief. That's the human mind. But he, who was blind, had his eyes opened by faith. A blind beggar can see through Christ, and those who think they're seeing through mind cannot see the truth. You see how topsy-turvy our world is in mind? This is the condition. The perversion of mind. It's false belief that it sees, whereas it doesn't. And yet a blind man learns to see by receiving Christ. Here, the mind of men typified by the Jews is shown to be blind. And the mind of the blind man is shown to be opened and awake to truth, released into another mind. How did he open thine eyes? Determined. The mind wants to know. It's going to get to the bottom of this quackery. He answered, well, I told you. You did not hear. Wherefore would ye hear it again? Would ye be his disciples? He's questioning the motive of these men who want to know how the healing took place. They want to know so they can disprove it. Then they reviled him and said, thou art his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. They do not know that Christ spoke through Jesus and through Moses. And they do not understand Moses. They think of him as a man. They do not understand Jesus. They think of him as a man. And therefore they are not Christ conscious, and the mind of man is incapable of being Christ conscious. This is a permanent condition of the human mind. It cannot be Christ conscious. This teaching will not let you fall back into the mistaken belief that your mind can become Christ conscious. Because it is only the crucifixion of that mind that is acceptable. If you are to attain the level of Christ consciousness. Your mind is so blind, it cannot even see a blind man healed. Now, we know God spake unto Moses, as for this fellow, we know not whence he is. The man answered and said unto them, why, herein is a marvelous thing. Ye know not from whence he is, and yet he hath opened mine eyes. The human mind does not know where Christ is, and yet Christ has opened the eyes of a blind beggar. Now ye know that God heareth not sinners, but if any man be a worshipper of God and doeth his will, he heareth. And since the world began, was it not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was born blind? And if the man were not of God, he could do nothing. Now who opened the eyes then of the blind man? Not the Pharisees, not the mind of man, not religion, not belief in God. Only the Christ received within the blind man's mind. The mind which had been crucified was out of the way, and Christ came through as a realization from the divine mind where the blind man stood. the human mind rolled away. The light comes through the blind man as the Christ idea. It could not be done through all of Judaism. It cannot be done through the religions of this world. It can be done only by Christ in you. That's laying it right where the truth is. Only Christ in you can perform the miracle of opening your inner eye. And so the cross-examining mind must be put aside. All of the questions by that inner trial lawyer must be put aside. We come right down to the simple faith of a blind man saying, "Open mine eyes." To whom? To Christ within. Right to source. To Christ within you say, "Open mine eyes." With the confidence that Christ being present, being one with the Father, all that can happen is that your eyes are opened. And then what do you see? You see God's kingdom. You see with the eyes and ears and the touch and the knowledge of the soul. You're dehypnotized. Now, if you feel on the verge of this great revelation that you can look out and see the kingdom, whereas before you could only see the world, that you can reach and touch the kingdom, whereas before you could only touch the world, that is what this should be leading you to, the awareness of that possibility. We're just a minute away, it would seem, is something ready to open all that had been invisible, and there you see what human eyes do not see. That is where we should be at this point. On the threshold. And the way to cross the threshold is to turn away from the human mind. Otherwise, this is what happens. The beggar says, "If this man were not of God, he could do nothing." But they answer and say, "Thou wast altogether born in sin, and thou dost teach us," and they cast him out. The truth comes to you, and you cast it out. Why? Because it isn't easy. It isn't easy at all. It's much easier to sit back in the sense of a false authority called the mind, with no strain and no strife, and go out there and slug it out with your competitors, than it is to take that mind, put it on the shelf, and rest in the divine, knowing I have no competition. The Father is the only self. Don't cast that beggar out. He was telling the truth. Christ opened his eyes. The same Christ that opens the eyes of those who will turn from the Pharisaic mind in each of us, which keeps us in bodies of clay. The blind are still blind in this world. The blind healings have not opened their eyes. But they have not really studied the blind healings, or the healings at all. They have looked at them like a Pharisee. and they have, with word of mouth, said, that's very nice. Now come to our church and we'll pray together. But Christ in you is that church. Christ in you showed that blindness, whether it's of the eyes or of the human sense of life, cannot continue. You cannot continue sitting by the highway begging when infinity is ever present to come through the door of your consciousness. Dehypnosis leads to the realization of no end. No end. No spiritual you and sickness. No spiritual you and disease. No spiritual you and any of the distresses of the world. Only a human you and. When there's a human you, there's and everything. When there's a spiritual you, there's and nothing. Only infinity. In the end of the world are the opposites. You break the law of the opposites. You dehypnotize not by the resolutions of your human mind, but by the willingness to let the divine mind live your life. You've had your glimmerings of that divine vision, divine hearing, divine touch. Those previews are telling you that all of the infinite self is present here now. You couldn't have had those glimmerings without it being here now in the fullness. Mortality is blindness. The healing of the belief in mortality is the Christ mission. There is no God and mortality. Going into chapter 10 of John, I don't think we can leave no end yet. We'll have to stay with that. There is you, the Spirit of God, and no end. And if you're accepting anything that is in the condition called mortality, these conditions must continue to besiege you until you are awakened to the fact that mortality is not a divine creation and therefore has no existence. It only exists because there's a human mind there. It is a condition that exists within the human mind. And where the human mind seems to be, it isn't there. I think that is probably the meaning here in Joel. If we continue to look through our eyes at the people of the world, all we shall ever see are human beings. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. That's the human picture. Sometimes good, sometimes evil. And that's what we shall always see, hear, taste, touch, and smell with our five physical senses. The only way to be dehypnotized is to quiet the physical senses You see how the physical senses and the human mind are one. To be still inside, then spiritual awareness will reverse the truth of being that enables us to see that which is not visible, to hear that which is not audible, and to know that which is not knowable with the human senses. Namely, Christ, here I am. Well, I think our blindness stories here have served their purpose for the moment. God is not blind. Christ is not blind. Spirit is not blind. God does not create blindness. God does not create sickness. God does not create problems. God does not make mistakes. The allness of God, the allness of the infinite mind, the ever-presence of the infinite mind everywhere, is a permanent guarantee that only the creation of the infinite mind exists. And in that creation there is only perfection. The moment you have accepted an imperfection, no matter how small, you're not in the infinite mind. You have fallen into another mind. You have fallen into the human sense mind. And the imperfection you are accepting is not where you are seeing it, it is in your mind, your false sense of mind. All around you is perfection. To live in that perfection is to fast from this human sense of mind, which does not see the perfection and is blind to it. You might this week go through your concordance and find some indication of where to look for knowledge about the one perfect mind. And build your week around finding biblical passages to support the knowledge in you that there is one perfect mind and no other. And its creation is all that is here. This perfect creation of the one perfect mind can never be tarnished, can never fall. It is the indestructible present kingdom of reality. And all heart attacks, all ulcers, all of the things we call the problems of the world are not happening. For there is one perfect mind maintaining its perfect creation. And the moment you accept anything as happening, which is imperfect, you have gone back into a dream consciousness. And you have, like the Pharisee, refused to accept that there is one perfect mind and one perfect creation present and no other. We've only done about 4 or 5 pages of No End, so let's continue with it. One perfect mind should be studied not through something you look in a book to find, but something you work out creatively within yourself. Finding your passages, looking them up, studying them, working with them, finding places in various books of Joel about one perfect mind, really moving into everything you can find that will tell you more about one perfect mind, until it's made such an impression on you that you're not blind to it. but awake to it. And then you know, wherever you are, the one perfect mind is. Its creation is present where it is, perfect now. Let's end with a meditation on this one perfect mind. It doesn't know Uncle Harry or Aunt Susie. It is no respecter of persons. It doesn't know human conditions. And when a human condition or person flows through you now, you're not in the one perfect mind. You're still in a state of diluting the pure truth of being. There must be a vacuum, a peace, the texture of love itself. For there is only one perfect creation everywhere. You can hold no one in bondage to the thought that there is an imperfect anything. The one perfect mind must find its perfect counterpart in your perfect thought, so that you're clearing out all that is imperfect. You'll notice how you stumble over that because the mind wants to hang on to something it thinks is imperfect that it has to solve. You've got to clear that out of there. There's nothing imperfect that your mind has to solve. That's a false world concept. There is only one perfect mind. When you wholeheartedly accept that, all the Pharisees within you will have been sent home. It's a good exercise. I think Socrates practiced it under tutorship from Plato, and he called it a catharsis or a loosening of unbelief. All that was untrue was released in this mental catharsis, just resting. He didn't call it meditation, but that's what it was. One perfect mind. Well, next week is Mother's Day, finally. I knew it would come. We'll see you soon.